Good evening, PGA DFS fans. What is going on? It is time for the PGA DFS Strategy Show. We've got a lot of stuff going on here behind the scenes. So while we may be moving a little bit, I think you can find us in this time slot for probably the next couple of weeks. And of course, Ben, our show, still sponsored by Monkey Knife Fight, their player props. They've been doing me well. I don't have to worry about Mito Pereira being 40% owned and making eagles and birdies galore. No, I don't have to worry about all that. In fact, I could worry about that and just bet on that or place it on that. And we're going to talk about how we do that in just a little bit, Ben. And if you haven't been over to Monkey Knife Fight, check it out for all the sports right now. Could be soccer that you're into, could be MMA, could be MLB, or of course, coming up, NFL. And with your deposit or first deposit, use promo code OSMO and get $100 match. That's the presenting sponsor of our show. And Ben, we're going to talk about one of the props this week that I love. But before I do, I also want to bring in another sponsor of our show, the new podcast that you've got going on. And Ben, I want you to tell everybody about it. You and Matt are doing some great work for college football.
Couple weeks away, 2 to 3 weeks, kickoff August 28th. Cannot wait. Betting you. So, you know, we do so much here, whether it's Osmo Odds or the Fantasy Football Channel, and certainly the channel that we're on now, the Osmo DFS main channel, but we wanted to have some special podcast only content, and we've got that with Betting You. It's just a full on college football centric podcast, breaking down everything from a betting perspective. We've got Matt, who is just, there is no better person to talk college football with. So we've got everything covered, preseason, postseason, during the season, whatever it is, we've got it. So get over there, obviously give it a listen, subscribe, join the feed, all the things that we ask you guys to do to support the show. But it's on all the platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So go and check it out. We'd love to have you as part of the community, but I am glad that you gave me a chance to talk about that, because I'm really, really excited of what we're doing with college football this year.
So you mean I can go there in addition to our 10 minutes before the show where I'm begging you to give me a line on a football guy? I can just go to that show. I don't have to.
You go right there. You get those winners. That's going to be the new routine once kickoff happens in a couple of weeks.
Love that. You and I can just talk about PDQ and dinners before that. Don't have to worry about that. I got to go to the college football show. So thanks for that, Ben. I definitely will be getting involved in that here in a couple of weeks, and all of you should too. Ben and Matt, some of the best in the industry doing that. So all right, let's head into our Monkey Knife Fight prop of the week for the WGC FedEx St. Jude Classic. And this week, I've got two, of course, as I always do. I do the full round for round one, and then I do the full tournament. So first one is Jordan Spieth and Brooks Koepka. They had a week off, kind of gotten the Olympic spirit, I'm sure, watched the golf. I've got them coming out and being prepared for the 68.5 is the line for the first round, Ben. We've seen this course yield plenty of birdies and plenty of good scores before. So 68.5, does that seem kind of low? A stroke and a half under par?
It does seem a little low. I mean, it's a tricky little course, but at the same time, you know, these are big time players. They're not coming back. We're going to talk little about, you know, who was at the Olympics and who wasn't. Certainly those guys, I assume, ready to go, ready to play. It's going to be interesting. I know we're getting a nice little runway of, we got a non-cut, of course, for the Olympics, and we go into the WGC. It actually kind of flows nicely schedule-wise. So I think these guys might be able to get under that number, even though you do have to play pretty good golf to get to shoot a number like that around Southwind.
Sure do. And one of the other things that I absolutely love about Monkey Knife Fit is, if you're short on a player, you don't think he's going to play well, or you have a read on them, one way to do that is to go on over. So this one is birdies or better for the entire tournament. Let's just say, for example, Ben, you think Xander Schauffele, that gold medal, it's going to be too much now. We're going to take a week off. And you think Colin Morikawa didn't get as much out of it as he should have. Well, you can bet the birdies are better. Just Colin Morikawa versus Xander Schauffele this week. Also in that matchup, Jordan Spieth versus Brooks Koepka. That one may be a little bit tougher, but just some of the options that you have over there on Monkey Knife Fight. So thank you for their sponsorship. As we move on and talk a little bit about TPC Southwind. And if you're a course history truther, well, let me tell you, one of the best on tour for that. We've got almost 30, 40 years of history here, Ben. So the par 70 you just mentioned, it's kind of short by standard, but yeah, the par fives are both scorable. So that's why we still get good scores each and every day. What have been your notes here? Obviously, it just changed to a WGC a couple of years ago. FedEx did that once they redid their deal with the PGA Tour. Obviously, the scores have gotten even better when the best players are here. But do you like this course, or is it kind of just one of those another week, if you will, type of courses?
Normally I'd say it's just another week. You know, certain courses, like everyone, they've got their courses that they seem to do. It's kind of like Travelers with me. I seem to do well when they go to Southwind, and I don't know why that is specifically. Maybe just guys that I like to play well here. You know, I remember DJ holing out, not to win because he was already going to win, but he put the exclamation point on a W with an eagle there. We've had some pretty interesting WGCs in recent years that you just highlighted. I like the course. It's a little more technical because it's not overly long, but I think it's a nice blend of hazards, difficulty, and like you said, best players in the world are here, so that's always an exciting time.
Yeah, sure is. And you said best players in the world. As we move in to talk a little bit about the WGC FedEx St. Jude, we've got 66 players right now. I'm expecting a couple more to be added to the field, Ben. I think with WGCs, I think we've gotten up to 78. I don't know if we'll get that high, but certainly expect a few more players to be added. Maybe a interesting talking point. Bryson DeChambeau is listed in the field after coming down with COVID before going to Japan. So I thought that was interesting. But outside of that, there are 47 of the world's top 50. One of the strongest fields in terms of that regard we'll have all year. Obviously, it's a WGC, a lot of money on the line. But outside of those golfers, Ben, there's a couple of ones that you might not have thought of got in this field this week that we'll talk about. Wilco Niedermayer being one of them and Minwoo Lee being another, just two guys that got exemptions for winning a tournament. For Niedermayer, it was Dimension Data Pro-Am, and for Minwoo Lee, it was the Scottish Open. So a couple of these guys ended up being so important last week at the Olympics. I mentioned Rory Sabatini, 3.5% owned, 6,800. The Slovakian comes through. I want to talk about him for a second. Also, CT Pan coming through. I want to talk about him. But for Rory Sabatini, we know he's from South Africa, right?
Yes.
But he married a girl from Slovakia. So I'm really not that opposed to him doing this. Are you? Because I saw some things in golf Twitter that they did not like it and were making fun of him. Me personally, I'm fine with it.
Totally fine with it. I'll say this. It's a non-story because there's no chance that Rory Sabatini's plan to convert to Slovakia and go to the Olympics is going to result in a medal. Oh, wait, somehow this guy's a mega mind genius. Like I remember when this happened and it was like, oh, he'll get to play. Like, who cares? Cause no offense, he's a fine player, but just not happening. Nope. I cannot believe that that's what this resulted in. All the power to him. Even if you had a problem, you've got to respect someone that planned it out like this and then have it work. That's a pretty cool story all in all.
And listen, I can assure you that he made waves in Slovakia with his performance. So maybe it will really spark a golf revolution in that country and all the right reasons for it to happen. And I'll be honest, his wife maybe had the best celebration of anybody all week after he hit that putt on 18. I don't know if you saw it, but she knew he medaled from that. I think most of us did as well. So let's talk about CT Pan. I brought up to you that he was the only one in the field that got handsomely rewarded yes. for a medal. And if you had bet CT Pan in the playoff at 33-1, you would have also been handsomely rewarded. So what do you think of that, beating literally the world's best players to come up with a bronze medal? It's why we love the Olympics, a 7-for-1 playoff. You only find that in Monday qualifiers now.
Yeah, it was great. Everything about it, you know, we were talking before the show, I had no complaints about anything. I think it was just, they're just scratching the surface though. You could do match play. You could do team play. You could do a combination of, you know,
how about long drive.
Yeah. You could have all sorts of events
in
golf, like they do with swimming or track and field. It would be really, really interesting to see if they'd ever explore that concept where it's not just one golf event, it's golf. And then there's a litany of events. So I loved it. I thought it was pretty cool. You know, on a personal, you know, week, it was not a great week. It was close to being really good, which is always probably the toughest. Not a ton of Xander, but I was really up there with Munoz, Casey. I needed someone to clip him and I needed Mito not to do what he did, but he certainly did. Credit to people who played him. And we move on to another non-cut.
40% of the people that played him, for sure. It's crazy. It hurts. And you know, a little bit of that is of course on us or me for not playing him, but a little bit, it's on the DraftKings as well for pricing at 7,200 for a guy that's coming in back-to-back top tens or top fives, top sixes. In a no-cut event, just kind of a bad price there. Hopefully we don't see that again this week, although there are a couple of options as we talk about, well, these are going to be our overnighters. And we say that because it is, of course, the FedEx St. Jude. And when we're shipping, we want our best items to come in as quickly as possible. So we're going to talk about some of those golfers here this week. And at the top of the board for the second straight week, almost the exact same prices as Colin Morikawa and Xander Schauffele. They lead 18 golfers coming over from Tokyo that are going to play here this week. So a decent amount of the field, Ben. Let's first jump right off the bat. Are you downgrading these guys at all? Or because they're gaining a day, if you will, coming back, it's fine. And we saw Mito Pereira, Johnny Vegas, Patrick Reed really not be affected by it at all. Mito obviously coming in fourth.
Yeah, do I think it's the ideal way to come into the FedEx St. Jude? Obviously not, because it's not. But they're the best players in the world. Most of them, I would venture to say, are flying pretty damn comfortably at this point in their lives. Yeah. I think it's more of a non-issue than anything else. Agreed. Maybe you could talk about Xander because he won, but I don't think it's nuts. If he doesn't play well this week, everyone could point to that, but I don't think that's the reason if he does or doesn't. I do think, though, looking at the pricing, Morikawa at 11 seems wildly overpriced considering how many other good options. I'm very interested, and it's very early, to see where the ownership falls, because I would suspect that most people are going to want to take the savings and not pay up all the way for Morikawa this week.
Yeah, and I think it's a big difference from last week where we had four other options. If you wanted to go up top, you know, we had Matsuyama, who's, you know, maybe not of the upper echelon, even though he played pretty well. Andy's the Masters champion, but he was 10-5 last week. Rory was 10-3. It was okay going to Morikawa at 11-2. You felt like he'd get involved in the tournament at some point, which he ended up doing. I actually had him pegged. You know, one of the things that I got most right last week was the fact that he'd stumble out of the gates and then get into the tournament over the weekend. Does that give him momentum in this week? Well, here's the thing. You can go $600 cheaper, get Jordan Spieth, who's been in a pretty good run of form, go all the way down to Victor Hovland at 9,700, who's also in pretty good form, as well as Louis Oosthuizen. So I think this week there's just a little too many options for everybody to jump on Morikawa. But like you said, if that's going to get us 15% or less in a no cut, I think it's definitely worth a shot. Now you're going to have to, of course, start your lineup with him. But if you don't pick Morikawa this week, Ben, above, we'll say 9,000, because that's pretty much the guys we think would win the tournament. Who are you starting your lineup with this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. There's not a lot of wrong answers here. You're going to just have to pick your poison in a good way, because for every guy, the guy right next to him is a world-class player. I think I'm kind of holding in on maybe seeing if Rory and DJ can, I'm not going to say right the ship, because it hasn't been that bad, but they haven't been nearly at the height of their powers. DJ, of course, just didn't have it at the 3M. And Rory, again, just he's in these tournaments, but he's never like really in them. I think this could be a pretty good spot for both of them. Justin Thomas has been a pain point for me all year. I'm not saying I'm done with him, but I certainly have to lessen my exposure. I thought he was very primed to contend. And again, 18 pars on that first day in the Olympics really took him out of contention immediately.
Yeah, it wasn't just his putting. It was bad. But he wasn't good on the approach either. He wasn't really that good off the tee. It's just, it's disappointing. It's one of those situations where we're trying to will this guy back to elite form, and it's just not there. Now, we say that, and he'll probably win here this week, because that's just how it goes. Now, let's talk about Victor Hovland. First time a Norwegian gets in the top 10 in the world, but like you just said with Dustin Thomas, was really never a factor. Played good again on Sunday. That's his second straight tournament where, you know, maybe he does end up paying off his salary. I think he ended up with 90 or so points, Ben. So do we just play this guy because of the consistency we're going to get, or do we just fade him until, you know, the next win comes?
Yeah, it's been difficult because the ownership has been there constantly, and he's doing enough that I think people hold on with him. And I get it. He's a prolific scorer. You're getting four rounds. I don't love that, you know, this is a par. I think if this was a par 72 and he could really attack with the driver, I'd have a lot more interest in him. I think the price is fair. You've got Louis right there. I just don't know how much room, you know, the guys directly above him to me are still my priority. And then you've got Bryson, who is going to be a total, assuming of course he plays.
Yeah.
I feel like most people are going to be a little apprehensive to go to him, just considering he wasn't playing all that good anyway. Then he withdraws from the Olympics. He could be a very lucrative boom bust type option this week.
I think he's probably going to be the lowest owned that we've seen him in a really long time, maybe even close to something like 5% with all that he's around. And I know it's a no cut, but when people go to look at the course history, which is something they would maybe look over if his form wasn't great. And the course history is maybe one of the worst in this entire field. So I think that's an interesting play this week. We'll talk about him in our GPP lineup that we'll build together, because I do think he is a prime candidate. Got some really low price guys this week that are in there as well. A couple more guys up here. Patrick Cantlay. He's had an incredibly volatile year after being the most consistent golfer on the PGA Tour for the previous, 4 years, would you say, Ben? Something in that range. So many missed cuts. When he plays good, he gets into contention. So are we now basically putting him in the GPP bucket as well? Or are you okay, because it's a no cut, throwing him in a cash lineup this week?
Probably on the fringe of that. I'm not sure I'd start there and work around it. It's just been really atypical. He's someone who didn't play a lot relative to his peers, but when he showed up, he was ready to go basically all the time. Then this year, he has a streak of 4 missed cuts at one point. Then he wins at Memorial when Rahm withdraws. But then at some of the majors, particularly the Open, didn't look great. He's been so volatile. I've actually been looking at him more as a bet, because you're getting, I still think the top win equity is there, but the floors have been worse. We were just talking in chat to a friend of the show, Stewie. I was saying 20-1 for a guy like Cantlay. I really don't mind that almost more than his DraftKings price. So you can structure it a lot of different ways, but he's been a weird 2021 for Cantlay.
Yeah. It's been very, very odd to watch from behind, because I've watched him for the last 4 years, and I think we could total up his entire missed cuts in the last 4 years, and he's equaled it. So like you said, maybe more volatility, maybe that's what he was going for, to try and get more wins, because he was just placing in the top 10 and the alike. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm a little impartial to it this week. I think I'd rather go down, play Scottie Scheffler at 9,100. And then there's, of course, the Daniel Berger discussion, which for the first 2 years of his career made this tournament his baby. And then came back again last year, came in second place. He has a miscut mixed in there. We don't have to worry about this week. But Berger, going to be probably highly owned, got the best course history of maybe anybody in the field. DJ's up there as well. What are you doing with Berger this week? His price is back up. We don't get him at 7,500 anymore.
Really interesting kind of clash of course history versus some of this is baked in. You're not going to convince me, if this was not at TPC Southwind, that Berger would be 92, even though he's playing fine. I don't see that. I tend to, even though we just talked about Mito and some other, if he's very, very popular, I doubt that I get over. He makes a lot of sense. He clearly likes the course. But when you're talking about small edges with only 66 to 78 players, and I can pivot, say, 1/3 the ownership on a guy like Scheffler or Casey or Finau or Fitzy, just using them as examples.
Yep.
I'll do it more often than not and live with the results.
So let's go ahead and talk about Fitzy. And now, if there are mentioned at the top, 47 of the top 50 in the world here. So a lot of good players. And if you do want to know how we are playing them this week, how we rank them in our GPPs, well, check out our Pro Plays. That's part of our premium subscription service behind the paywall. It's one of the best things we offer, though. If you're just trying to come and get how we rank them, this is the place to do it. Sometimes you'll see plays like last week for me, CT Pan and Rory Sabatini, both in the top 15. That's because of where they're priced in the GPP ownership that they were garnering. So that's the tool. It's not necessarily who we think is going to win the tournament. No, this is our ownership for GPPs. That's how we cater it. And of course, if you want to check out some of our other free premium tools that we have going on today, well, it's Top Stacks for MLB. Now, I know we missed the morning slate, or not the morning slate, the early evening slate, but still plenty of golf, or not golf, baseball to be played today. I believe we have another slate to be going on. See, they're both golf and baseball. I'm sorry. It's a little confusing for me right now. It just happens, right? So check that out. Top Stacks, great tool to use and a great tool to get a little bit of a piece of what we do behind the paywall. And a couple of other guys in this range before we move on. Paul Casey, Ben. I'm going to take the other side with him this week. The form has been so good. 9,000, I think he'll be one of the highest owned. And I'm just going to fade him because I have no other reason not to.
Yeah, I mean, honestly. No, listen, he's someone to get back to. You asked me about Cantlay. Like, I think Paul Casey, if you are playing cash, should be in your cash lineup.
Yep.
Just playing too good not to. Tournament-wise, I'm kind of indifferent. I definitely want him in the pool. I don't know how much I'm going to need. I like him over Berger. But he's, again, I think these guys are such good players all in all that I tend to gravitate, not on all six spots, but this is a target-rich environment where I will look to these other guys as pivots. We'll see. I like Casey. I really backed him heavily. I bet him to win last week. Didn't get there, but gave it a shot. He's playing good golf, but as you mentioned, could be amongst the highest owned players on this entire slate.
For sure. All right, now we've gone through our overnighters or our one-dayers, if you will. Now we're going to go into our standard packages. These are ones that you're going to get, you know, every day from FedEx, and also the ones that are going to build a bulk of the lineups. Let's start off right off with Tony Finau, since we're talking about Patrick Cantlay. I throw Tony Finau in this exact same bucket, Ben. He's just not having a good year. Very volatile. A lot of missed cuts. Not that many top tens. What do you do with him at 8,900 this week? Is it a simple, easy, just fade him? I mean, we don't have a top 10 since the PGA.
I don't think it's a simple, just fade him, to be honest. The form would yield you to that, but I can't get a grip on what he's doing. He putted really well at the 3M, but still didn't break through. His irons have been a little off. At the beginning, he was just ball striking machine, couldn't putt. I do think he's somewhat close, but at the same time, I look at the course. I'm not sure it's the best for him. I think you're going to make a case for him because he's a prolific scorer and you're getting four rounds. But when you look at the guys around him, whether it's going up to Casey or Scheffler or down to Fitzy or even Reed, I tend to say those are my preferred targets in that range.
So what do you think it is about this golf course and Fitzy? You think it's just a product of running into good form, or do you think it actually could be a really good fit for him? A lot of less than drivers. Not that many par fives. I mean, sixth and fourth is certainly not something to write off.
Yeah, 2 years ago, I really thought he was going to win here. I think that was when Brooks won, I want to say. That was a wild day. I was driving over from Massachusetts. I'm sure everyone needs to know this, but that's neither here nor there. I do think when you go and you look at Fitzy, he's been pretty vocal that, and the results really haven't bared it out. Oh, I love Harbortown. I love Heritage. I love everything about it. Well, this has some characteristics that are going to mirror that. As you mentioned, not going to need aggression off the tee. Can lean on that short game. Certainly makes his fair share of putts, particularly on Bermuda. I think Fitzy makes a lot of sense. His form hasn't been great either, though. So it's not like he's on fire coming in.
No. Well, here's the thing. Let's go a little bit more, dive a little bit more into the Fitzy bagging of does he like the golf course or not. He specifically stated that at the Open, hated the course, said it just did not set up for him, came in 55th. So maybe we write that off, but mention that, you know, Congaree set up good for him. There was a top 10. Scottish Open, we had a T2. So for me, I know I typically fade Fitzpatrick above 8,500. I am interested a little bit this week. I'm going to hope we get a little bit lower ownership at least, even if it's just a little bit, I'll take it. So Mike in our chat mentions that we're going to be fading the chalk again this week with Paul Casey, and we're going to be burning money. Probably going to be the case. Can you get a loan? Well, I might need one from you, so we might have to go to Jordan behind the glass for that.
He's got us all covered.
He's got us all covered at this point. All right, let's talk about a couple of more guys. I forgot to ask you about Hideki. Last week, I put out a tweet on, I think it was Friday night. Honestly, I got so confused because I was watching golf at night that I didn't know what day it was. But I said that he noticeably looked more fidgety than he typically does. Like, he'd hit his drive, a lot of one-handed drives that ended up in the center of the fairway. A lot of the times he'd get over to his bag before the ball landed. Obviously, there was a lot going on. You know, his home event in Tokyo, obviously the media was over him all week. A little bit less pressure on him, obviously, this week. Does that mean you want to play him? We didn't talk about him at the above. That's why I'm going back.
I do think he's one of the guys that, you know, I think will go by the wayside a little. He gets a price drop. The allure kind of wasted away. He's fine, but nothing really stood out. And that can be a good thing. Don't think you'll need a ton to get over relative to the range. But at the same time, you know, it's tricky. His putter looked like it was cooperating for a large stretch there in Tokyo. That's always the catalyst with him. So I'm sure he'll be in the pool, but to be honest, not really a priority for me at the same time.
Same here. Totally agree. Patrick Reed, absolutely no upside right now. We've kind of chronicled that on this show that, you know, maybe a lot of top 20s, but also a missed cut mixed in there. And it's just not good right now. Kind of similar to what we were saying about Justin Thomas. I mean, it's just not great. Maybe they get there. Maybe they put up some points, but I can't see Patrick Reed getting inside the top 10 this week.
Yeah, and I mean, Reed is known as, and I always say this because I believe it, he comes ready to play, he grinds. But even though he does those things, it's still a situation where he is flying just all over everything. He's gone, and then he went over to Sandwich, and then he flew to Minnesota, and then he flew to Tokyo, and now he's flying. Like, at some point, that catches up with you. He is the only guy who's done that. Mito, I believe, and Vegas are not in this. So,
nope.
That's really tough ask. It doesn't mean he can't play well. It just means that his chances, I think, are slightly minimized for that. And then you add it because he's not playing good on his own merit. I do have him behind Fitzy and certainly Chalk Casey and Scheffler.
Now, dropping down a bit, Shane Lowry comes up. Here's the thing about him. He can't avoid one bad round. Every week, it's one bad round, a stretch of holes. And last week, it was on Sunday, and he tanked down the board. Had an outside shot at a medal, started the day at 10 under like Tommy Fleetwood did. Obviously would have needed to get to what I think it was 18 was the win.
A medal?
Just for a medal, yeah, for a medal. 15. 5 under wouldn't have been that bad, a little bit better than average. Just wasn't good. So I think it's an avoid for me. It's not like we're getting a price discount. It's not like he's, say, 7,800 this week, which is what I think he should be.
I don't really see it. Shane Lowry's been playing great all year. Props to him, but you're paying for that right now. And I don't think that, you know, you can't play everyone. And obviously these guys are in play, but we've mentioned a lot of names already. He's one I could do without. And then, I mean, the wild card, I'm not even going to pretend to know what to do with Webb, who he wasn't great at the Open, but he did show a little form there last time we saw him.
Pouring in putts, back to doing that. Ball striking still not there, though. T19, I think, obviously, he's going to be the highlight of the field next week at the Wyndham, assuming he plays, which I'm sure he will. It's, you know, he's got a kid named after it or something, right? Yeah, kid's named after it. So maybe I'll just wait and play him next week when he's going to be, you know, $11,000 and probably 20% owned and probably coming first or missed the cut. Yeah, I think it's easy for me to fade him this week, though, Ben, because Neiman and Answer both showed me that they're not too far off, and they're both cheaper than him. Last week at the Olympics, Neiman's kind of been trending. Answer, same thing. I'd much rather play either of them. In fact, you could even go down to the next two guys, Smith and Fleetwood. Maybe not Fleetwood, but certainly Cam Smith I'd play over Webb Simpson this week.
I'm with you. I like Answer. Accurate. Can hit those fairways, gain strokes off the tee, particularly with accuracy. I'm definitely higher on, I was higher on Fleetwood than you last week as well. I'm going to kind of stick with Tommy here. He, you know, he wasn't great on Sunday. He had a chance for a double eagle, which
that could have done world wonders for me. And probably
that was the one, you know, I was sitting keeping it. I tried to keep a Zen like approach. I had to, after the tennis fiasco of last week, I stood up for that.
The Djokovic.
I thought, no, it was just so much nonsense on the fair court, enough. But I stood up for that. I thought it was going in. I really did. And then not only did it not go in, then I just found out that Mito also eagled, and it literally did nothing. So
no, it's funny on the coverage too, right? Like they showed Fleetwood's double eagle. They cut away, go to two other shots. And then all of a sudden they come back and they go, and just after Tommy Fleetwood almost has an double eagle, Mito Pereira now steps up to hit it. And you know it's like going to 3 feet after they say that. And sure enough, it did. And of course, he drained it and birdie two of the next three and get all the way to 2-4. That's a story that has already been written. A story that has not been written, maybe, is Will Zalatoris. Another big question mark this week. Price would look good, but this guy's back was legitimately broken by the hay at the Open Championship. I mean, I don't know if you watched the video. I did. He cringed right away. And, you know, the guy is maybe 120 pounds soaking wet. So I guess it would make sense. He should have just taken an unplayable lie there. But that's beside the point. What do you do with him here that we haven't seen him since that injury?
Yeah, I think that's concerning, obviously. You know, you don't pull out of a major unless you're hurt. And he probably did the smart thing because he's a young guy. And didn't have it, but I don't know. I think there's a natural tendency to maybe work back into things. And I think we all know, not that you're going to predict a withdrawal, but in a miscut event, it's bad. But you can say, okay, I've got 5 of 6. If you have 5 of 6 in a non-cut, you can just close the laptop, obviously. You have no chance. So I do worry a little about that with him, just because if he is not playing well and there's a chance he says, you know what, let me get some extra rest. I came back too soon. Things of that nature.
I'll take the $60K and yeah, donate it to charity, we hope.
It's a little freaky. I would definitely rather play Fleetwood. Sungjae is kind of interesting just because, of course, after the narrative of, you know, that was such a big week, I do think there's got to be a natural, like, deflating quality to it, but I'm sure the ownership's going to deflate as well.
Yeah, it definitely is. He was one that I really want to spend a second to ask or to talk about, because he was out of the Olympics, out of the golf tournament, two over par through 21 holes, right? And then all of a sudden reeled off like 11 birdies in his next like 14 holes, mixed in with a bogey in there. Maybe it was 8. Sorry, I had 11 written down because of the next 3 holes. He had a stretch of holes, 8 in 11 holes. That's why I got the 11. Got him back into the event, just could never get going on Sunday. You got to think that there's a little bit of a letdown coming, though, to not get it done. And I mean, he's got 13 or 12 years to decide whether he's going to just deflect to the United States or really actually go serve. So I'm not worried about that, but there's got to be a letdown spot. Jason Kokrak is sitting right there at 7,800, a guy that just pours on DFS points when he gets to the weekend. So I think I'd rather click Kokrak's name. I think I'd probably even rather go down to the Harris English and Brian Harman range before I play Sungjae this week.
Sungjae, the one thing I will say I like talking about this week, in the sense that he wasn't in it really. He made a little comeback, but it wasn't like if he would have lost in the playoff to CT Pan, there's a 0% chance I would have played him this week. Yeah, like he realistically probably wasn't sweating the medal too hard in the tournament, in the sense that he was never really in it per se. It wasn't snatched away from him. He didn't crumble, anything like that. So I think that helps a little bit in terms of the unquantifiable aspect of that. But I got to ask you, you just mentioned a couple guys I have no problem with. I thought Ty Hatton would be in the mid eights, not the mid sevens.
Yeah. What's going on here? I know the form isn't great, but you know, he's a top 13 player in the world. I think still, this is one of the worst prices of the week. It reminds me of Mito Pereira last week, even though Hatton's not playing nearly as good. Reminds me of that. If you decide to fade him, he's likely to break you. Yeah. If you decide to play him, he's likely to come in 40th, where you should have leveraged. That's kind of the situation that I'm in my head. Not sure what I'm doing with him this week. Maybe if it fits the build, I'm going to do it. But I didn't ask you about Corey Connors, and as a guy that I'm high on this week, 8,100, the ball striking looked good coming off a good Sunday at the Olympics. He did make a run. You like him at all this week statistically? And as you know, I write a statistical article for us here each and every week. It is free. Check that out. He's one of the top 3 ranked in the statistical measures that I looked at this week.
I have no problem with him. I actually think that with Paul Casey, he's a great piece for cash. This guy's a top 20 machine. And although in a non-cut, top 20 isn't the same, but he still rarely kills you. He's a great ball striker. He's not a good putter, but he's made strides. Got to give him credit. I think the price is more than reasonable. I have no problem with it. I do like Cam Smith and Tommy Fleetwood and Anser, and they're going to be more in my tournament bucket. But if you're building a core really steady, Casey, Connors, even Hatton, I think that's a pretty reasonable start for more, flatter payout type structures.
We're going to go over that after, of course, we go through our long haulers, which will be our deep shot, if you will. Just another little FedEx emblem there. We're going to build a couple of lineups. One of those, like you said, Ben, I like the start of Casey Connors. We'll have to remember that for we'll call it our cash core structure. It's how I would use that would be in my biggest dollar buy-in. That's how I would use this lineup. And of course, the GPP would be for the $5 or $20 on DraftKings this week that we're talking about. So a couple more guys. Harman, he scores so well and just continues to get it done. He was on the Millionaire Maker lineup for the Open yet again, 82 and a half points. He gets it done when he gets to the weekend. So because of that, he's gotten invited to the WGC here this week. You want to play him, or is this a spot to take the other side?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great putter, pours it in, as you mentioned. The course is not going to overpower anybody, so he's in good shape there. I have really no complaints. It really, I know it's not the most glamorous thing to talk about, but obviously on the show, you know, you guys in chat, we love you guys, so we're going to give you our honest opinions.
Yeah.
In these non-cuts, most guys, until you get to the bottom, are very playable. It's more about small edges like ownership, things like that, how the team is structured, in my opinion. So I like Harman. I do think that there's a chance he's very, very popular, but we've said that about a couple guys now, and they all can't be super popular. And that's why I'll rely on, you know, you and Alex and everyone in the projection side of things for our ownership to get a better sense of how much is too much with a guy like Harman.
Yeah. And like we said, I mean, it's been pretty good, especially when he gets to the weekend. I'm just going to check his,
he'll be getting to the weekend. Spoiler alert.
He'll definitely be, well,
watch. You could clip this for social when it's like, oh, Brian Harman randomly withdraws.
It's from the tournament. Gets COVID or whatever. Sixth place finish back here in 2015. Before that, I was two missed cuts. So at least the top 10. One would think that if Matt Fitzpatrick does well, Brian Harman probably does as well, because very, very similar structures in how they play their games. Obviously, one's a lefty, one's a righty. Would you say Brian Harman is the left-handed Matt Fitzpatrick? Is that a good analogy to make here?
Hey, more than Bubba is, I'll give you that.
All right.
I mean, they've got a lot of similarities in the sense that they're not going to overpower courses. They've got to rely on their short game. And every time they play well, it has an element of flukiness, but it's not. It's just the way they play. They make more putts than most because that's how they, they mitigate their disadvantage off the tee. And then you've got guys like Sergio who are the complete opposite. He's going to have to drive it great, be precise, because he can't make any putts no matter where they play.
Nothing showcases that better than leading the field in strokes gained tee to green at the 3M Open and not even getting inside the top 15. Ben, there's only a few golfers, I think, in the world that can do something like that. Sergio Garcia's on that list. Tony Finau might be on that list. Just a horrendous putter. A couple of other guys I'm sure you could tell me about. But at 7,300, do we really care that he can't putt well?
I mean,
inevitably we care a little bit, but at 7,300, we don't need that much from him.
Certainly you're going to get your 72 holes, which hopefully smooths out the putter. Now, in the case of the 3M, it just made it worse, because if he would have got cut, he wouldn't, he gained, just for context, he gained 13 strokes tee to green at the 3M. He lost 7 strokes putting. That's a 20 stroke difference. That's insane. That only happens once or twice a year. Benny on would probably have more of those, but he sometimes doesn't get the 4 rounds when that happens.
Yep.
I like Sergio. I think that you're able to stomach the bad putting because of the ball striking, but there's no doubt for him to be effective, he can't do that. You're going to get your 4 rounds, but he can't lose 8 strokes putting if you're going to return value.
No doubt about it. A couple of other guys before we get to our long haulers that I want to discuss. Adam Scott, not having a great year, but relatively consistent. 7,200 is a cheap price for him. Then you've got Billy Horschel, Mark Leishman, Justin Rose, and Ian Poulter. I might be skipping all 4 of those guys. I'll have a little bit of Adam Scott. But I like the guys that are priced at 6,900 and below. Any of those 4 you want to play this week, obviously Rose at 7,100 has to be somewhat intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, these names are intriguing, but first of all, they're not even close to cash considerations. These may be round out or leverage in a tournament. If I had to do that, I'd probably go to Adam Scott, who I still think is a little confusing because his putting has been much better and his ball striking, which has been his staple for a decade, really hasn't been nearly as crisp this year. I kind of like that because I think it's closer to connecting. But when you're trying to eliminate guys in a pool like this, I tend to be comfortable. Billy Ho, Poults, if I don't get a lot of them or any of them, I could live with that.
Yeah, I think I could too. All right, let's go on to our long haulers. But before we do, I want to bring up, you kind of brought it up at the top of the show, that doing a podcast focused piece of content there with your college football, the betting you. And I want to tell everybody that you can also get this show in podcast format in all of your favorite providers. And also, it's one of the best ways to get a free month of Osmo Plus Platinum. It's all you got to do is review this show or review Ben's Betting You, leave it a 5-star. And with that 5-star review, leave your Twitter handle or Osmo username. Reviews are good for up to a year, and they'll be pulling a winner every week. So check that out. Of course, you get a chance at winning a free month of Osmo Plus Platinum. That's a $90 value there. So all you got to do, review a podcast for us. And of course, if you travel for work or what have you, a great way to listen to the show and not have to worry about how my hair is going to look, if it's going to fit on the screen, how if Ben and I are both wearing our glasses. Now, you don't have to worry about any of that. Typically, I don't anymore because it'll just sweat right off my face. That's why you download our podcast. So, all right, let's go on to our long haulers here. And there are four right off the bat that I think are much better plays than the four golfers priced right above them. It's Sam Burns, Cam Davis, Matt Wolf, and Cameron Champ. All guys that are extremely volatile, but in this no cut, I think over four rounds, they're going to give you points. It's now just trying to pick who's going to finish the highest out of the four of them. So who would you pick out of those four guys for your lineups this week, Ben?
Yeah, you're not joking. These are I think you've got probably a potential dark horse winner in there and the guy who may finish dead last in the field. They're those type of players. I'm going to go with, I think Cam Davis, ironically, is probably the most stable of the bunch. I mean, Wolf is the most intriguing to me, but I really don't know what to make of him at this point. His off the tee game at the 3M was horrendously, almost unheard of bad. He still made that cut, though. He's such a volatile player. I like Cam Davis, though. Pretty steady, certainly had a breakthrough, but even after that, still making some cuts. I'm intrigued. I don't mind it. I will throw out Kisner as a total different type of player, but man, when he gets putting, I think he could be very, very effective, more in the Harmon Fitzy bucket than these guys, but don't count out Kisner if he gets it rolling.
Yeah. And two top tens in his last three starts. It's not like he's playing bad. I mean, I know he basically finished dead last at the Open, but it was really because of a bad Saturday. And that's sometimes what happens with Kisner when he totally checks out. Might even happen with a lot of these golfers, not just Kisner. Max Homa, Carlos Ortiz, man, speaking of checking out, Ortiz did that on Sunday. Holy, what happened there? Obviously, just a total letdown. Does that mean you want to fade him this week? Would you rather play Homa, or would you rather just go down to the two lefties at 6,600? Talking about Phil Mickelson and Bobby McIntyre.
Would rather play Homa over Ortiz. I just think kind of Homa's a better player, and he's not coming from Tokyo. Oh, boy, the lefties. I got Bobby Mack right at the 3M. I was able to dodge him there. I kind of want to buy back, though, because I do like his skill set, and I don't think the mass is going to be on there. I can't play Phil. I just can't do it.
Still can't do it?
No. Even in a non-cut, there's just – that I think that, and it, listen, a victory is a victory and a major victory is a major victory, but I think that's going to mask the irrelevance of Phil for a long time. And to me, look at everything else around it. It's been pretty, pretty bad for a long time.
Yeah. That's why I love chat. They remind me of bringing stuff up and a great point. Our buddy, TS Tokyo Swan just brought up Ortiz is hurt. And now that he brings that up, I do recall watching the Olympics. I don't know what shot it was, but he hurt himself. He hurt his right wrist. And from there, it just didn't look good. I'll have to go back and see if I can find the video of it. I remember watching it and being like, whoa, that's a little weird. And obviously, you know, given the fact that he bombed, something was bothering him. So, for me, I would rather play Phil Mickelson this week. 6,600 now. Ben, I think at 7,800 at the PGA Championship, I think I said this to you, that where I want to play him is below 7,000 in a no cut event, because that way, if he finishes dead last and he still is on PGA Tour Live because he's in dead last and the first guy out there, he's going to give us some points. He's going to give us some thrills and some fills. Now let me ask you, the match when we saw Phil, he had something taped on his hand. Did he get stung by a bee, or was he also hurt? I don't know if you remember this or not.
I don't. I was more fixated on Aaron Rodgers' hair and what was going on with him. Is he coming back to the Packers? But I just can't do it. I mean, I just look at Phil's. There's nothing.
Here's my point, though. Here's my point. Last place at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, right? 68 points. Basically, last place at the Travelers, 64 points. Now, that's not great, but it just goes to show you that you probably aren't going to get in too much trouble by playing him this week. I think that's maybe what I'm trying to pitch.
Yeah, and that is fair. There's no doubt that Phil, amongst maybe any, he's on the short list of golfers that get a boost in a non-cut. Just because of the way he plays, he misses more cuts than he should because he's going to have a blow-up round somewhere. And if it comes on Thursday or Friday, he never gets the chance to have that 64 on Saturday or Sunday. He does here. There's just good players down here, though. Like Ryan Palmer's there, yeah, let's Lucas talk about Glover. Him. There are other names that I think you can go to. And then you've got a string of, I mean, there's some guys at the bottom I'm not sure about, but even like Higo, Aaron Rye, Lucas Hebert, these are names that we've brought up in bigger spots than this over the past couple weeks.
Yeah, I want to talk about Higo and Hebert after we get through Ryan Palmer at 6,500. He's a guy that went through a really good stretch, but has been off and has been off for a little bit. Then all of a sudden he threw in the T4 at the Scottish Open, Ben. So it has me at least intrigued to say, okay, top 10 form isn't that far off. We've had it in the last month. Why I'm more intrigued to play him. Plus he's got some good course history. I think he came in 15th here last year at this event.
Yeah, I think that you're going to find some reasonable players. The depths of these fields are so it drops off at the very bottom, but like these are good players. Maybe they're not playing as consistent or as slightly as talented as the next batch, but I have no problem plugging in a lot of these guys. They're PGA Tour regulars. They're winners. I mean, Kevin Na wins things. Stuart Sinks had a big run. Glover, I'm not saying play all of them, but I feel pretty comfortable in the mid sixes.
All right, so Kevin Na, here is another one of my weird things that I do. I play Kevin Na when it's a regular PGA Tour event, when he's 9,000 and 8% owned. It paid off at the John Deere Classic. Not that I made any great lineups with him. He was a good target for me. And I don't play him when he's seen as one of the cheapest golfers in the field in a no-cut event because he is one of those short-listed golfers that'll withdraw on you for no reason at all. Louis Oosthuizen, Jason Day, kind of complete that shortlist. Henrik Stenson used to be that guy. He's really not really a factor at all anymore, so I don't include him. But let's just remove it. Four rounds of Kevin Na at 6,600 in a no-cut event does seem like it's a pretty good bargain, does it not?
Definitely seems like a good bargain, but once again, I do have to throw out the you know, whatever you want to call it, not the asterisk, but if Kevin Na is like extreme chalk for some reason, I would gladly pivot away from him because bad Kevin Na is non-competitive. Like he's one of the guys that can really torpedo a lineup. I think there's no floor associated with him. And that's something you've got to measure. It's not just about upside. There's also, okay, if my other five already have enough leverage, you don't need to over leverage. And I think Kevin Na is a lot riskier than probably other people do.
We got two recent winners at 6,400 right below him too. Siwoo Kim is the other guy there, but KH Lee and Lucas Glover. Now, KH Lee, he's maybe a little bit more removed. He won the AT&T Byron Nelson back in May, it looks like. But 3M Open had a T6, another TPC course. KH Lee seems like a really good value this week. But would you rather play Lucas Glover, who won the John Deere a few weeks ago?
I think I would. KH Lee is a weird one. He wins. Fantastic breakthrough. Then he's horrible. And that's no surprise. It's like, okay, this guy had a life-changing win. I get it. Then he's fantastic at the 3M. He gains across the board. I don't know what that is, but I think Lucas Glover is a little more easier to project. Just a solid player. Lean on the ball striking. If he can putt, I mean, Bermuda and him don't really mix, but I can live with that. I'm not saying I want to get to either of these guys, but if I double up north of 10, I could get to these guys.
Let's stick with the Lucas theme and talk about Lucas Herbert. Might as well throw in, I think it's Herbert. I don't think I said that right at the first time.
Hebert, Herbert, nobody knows what's going on.
Let's put him and Garrick Higo together. These guys were both above 8,000 at a PGA Tour event 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago even. Now they're both 6,300 in a no cut. I like both of them this week. They both play that aggressive Phil Mickelson style. And I think that both of them have ownership cooled off and price. So I think it's a good mixture this week for me.
Yeah. It's amazing how fast, you know, Higo, Bobby Mack, these guys, even Mito, watch, you know, Mito eventually allegedly is going to miss a cut and then it'll be like old news. But I'm probably more towards a Bear, Herbert, whatever this guy's name is. he's been closer in recent weeks, and I've gotten away. I didn't really like him at the 3M. I thought that was a weird spot, but you're going to get the rounds here. As you mentioned, really good score, certainly live for streaks, bonuses, things like that. And he was playing fantastic golf. I know most of that was more where he's most comfortable in Europe.
Yep.
But to me, a WGC is actually a better situation because, you know, Europeans and whatnot, they've been in those. They played in these type of events before, whereas a traditional PGA Tour event for Higos and Herbert types can be very challenging, even though Higo was able to just break through immediately.
Yeah, crazy how that happened.
That was absurd.
Would you rather play his South African country mate Wilco Nienaber this week? Sorry about that. This doesn't seem like a perfect course. I mean, obviously the best club in his bag is his driver, and he's not going to get to use that this much this week.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he does somehow, because watching that guy drive the ball is fantastic. But as you mentioned, this is just not the course to do that. And if he can't do that, I think that's an extreme problem for this guy.
Now, just a little bit of narrativeness to Wilco. A top 25 here would, if my math is correct and I understand the rules, which I believe I do at this point, get him into the Korn Ferry Tour Finals with the amount of non-member FedEx Cup points he would have earned from the Palmetto, the made cut at the U.S. Open, the made cut last week at the Barracuda, and now, of course, this week playing in the WGC. So a chance. And Ben, we know what can happen if you get into the Korn Ferry Tour Finals. Your name could be Tom Lewis and you win, and now you're a PGA Tour member. And that's exactly what can happen. So a big week for Wilco this week for him. Two other guys at min price, though, that I'm interested in. I know this sounds weird. Typically, we don't do that. But Wade Ormsby is coming in off of back-to-back top 12s. Now, like you said, it's on, you know, open style or link style courses, not like this.
The Kazoo Open. Oh, yeah. Kazoo.
Oh, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Gotta love it. And this one, the winner of the $40 million PIP award on Twitter, self-anointed, is Jim the Herman Herminator. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm interested this week at the min price. The guy gets it done every now and again. And in those builds where I need a min price guy and I don't want to play Nienaber or Ormsby, I'm going to click Herman's name.
I don't know how necessary it's going to be to get down here, but if you do, you can do a lot worse, particularly with Herman, who
everything four straight out. Made cuts all inside the top 30.
Fantastic. Positive strokes, tee to green in all four, positive strokes, putting in all four. The guy obviously knows who he is. He knows his game, knows what kind of courses and situations I think he can excel at. And to me, this course is more in that than not. You know, this is a brutal test, a Quail Hollow, something that's very driver heavy. I don't think it would be the best for him. I think this is fine. And if he starts putting as he's been, there's no reason he can't outscore his placement. And if he does that, now you are set up because you took the min on a guy. You've got, you know, the rest of your salary to do. You have $44,000 for five spots.
I tried to do this with Robert Streb. I don't remember which WGC it was, Ben, but I tried to take him at the min price, and he wasn't awful. I feel more comfortable taking Herman this week than I did Streb, and Streb is also another name at min price.
I agree with that.
I'll take Herman over him. Last guy I want to mention, Minwoo Lee. He's coming off of that first-place finish at the Scottish. Definitely a volatile player. I'll have a couple shares. Victor Perez, 6,100. Here's a guy that ranked very highly in the world, but in awful form since the top 10 at the Players, where he had to hold a bunker shot even just to make the weekend. Crazy how that can happen. Last one, Martin Laird, 6,200. He pops on my statistical fit article that I write, and the form, it's not great. Going to get you interested in Martin Laird?
I think you could make it probably a case, but I just know it's a product of it would have to be a perfect storm of things because I have other guys, as we already talked about, down here, including a couple that are cheaper than him that I like more. So given the fact for that, it would be almost impossible for me to think that he weasels his way onto any of my main lineups.
I think I'm in that same ballpark there. All right, we're going to wind up our show here with a couple of lineups that we're going to make. Last week, we went back and checked, and we had one of our two lineups cash. We did not have Xander on either, so that kind of hurt us, but one of our lineups still got three guys in the top 10, two of them were in that playoff, plus Fleetwood, who put up a lot of points. So ended up getting through the cash line. We're going to see if we can do a little bit better here this week. We'll start with our GPP lineup. This is one that we're going to look for the $5 or $20 on DraftKings. And I think we set off the top. Do you think that there's anybody that's going to be close to the ownership of Bryson DeChambeau up here? Or do you think it's basically our best leverage spot of the week?
No, I think if you're willing to, you know, in a very top-heavy tournament, if you want to go driver-heavy, I think Bryson is a great place to start, a great piece to have, and you've got ample options to pair him with. Sergio comes to mind a little bit, another very good driver of the ball, but there's a lot of ways you can go, and I like putting Bryson in a tournament lineup this week.
Yeah, I think I do too. And our first run projection still has him a little high. He's trending at about 12 or 13% with Matsuyama coming in right around there. Ownership just dropped not too long ago. Okay, so let's go ahead. Let's make a driver-heavy lineup that starts with Bryson. So we're going to put in Garcia. I think for me, if we're going to do a driver-heavy and a golfer that has had okay success here, Cam Champ, we'll put him in at 6,700. I think is one of those GPP targets coming off a win. Probably not going to be targeted all that much because he is, would like to see the consistency the form continue and not drop off like it has after his two previous wins on the tour. So we're at 8,800 left. Do we want to go up top, Ben, or are you comfortable with sticking in this mid eight range, maybe low nines for our last three guys?
So, yeah, I think the good thing about this build, you have a lot still left in terms of different builds. You could go above Bryson. You could go three in the middle. I think a guy like Scottie Scheffler could be interesting in this spot at 91.
Okay.
And then I looked at Neiman. What do you think about that?
That's kind of where I was leaning here. Obviously, strokes gained off the tee. It's his best asset when he's going. So 8,400, that leaves us 9K flat. I want to leave Paul Casey for our next lineup.
Okay.
Neither you or I are into Tony Finau this week. So we want to go with a little bit of an anti-build for this last spot and click Fitzpatrick, leave a couple hundred dollars on the table.
I think it's perfect. Like I said, I say this all the time. When I have a themed lineup, it's not all six guys because that's too much. It's just a theme of some of the core elements here. So you put Scheffler and you put Fitzy. You leave a couple hundred dollars on the table.
Yep.
You've got some really good drivers. And I just like Fitzy. I think sweet. He's a very strong play. And Scheffler rounding that out is very effective. So one up. We've done that. And now let's kind of see if we can make maybe a more cash-oriented lineup. A lot of ownership associated with this one, but something that could be effective in maybe double ups.
Yep, let's start with Paul Casey and Corey Connors. I think you and I highlighted that. We can even throw in Ty Hatton there as say, the best value on the board. So we got Casey, Connors, Hatton. That leaves us with 8,500 left. Cam Smith, is he too volatile for this type of build? Would you rather play Abraham Answer here, who – you know, so consistent off the tee. I think I'd rather lean there. Maybe even both.
I don't mind both. I would prefer Answer, though, if I had to pick.
Okay, let's do Answer. I'm all right with that.
We got, what, two spots left with 86?
Two spots left at 86. Is this a spot where we say maybe go up to, like, Daniel Berger because he's a little highly priced, and that leaves us with 8K flat? Are you ready to buy into Tommy Fleetwood?
Yeah, I mean, listen, with a field like this, you could definitely do that if you wanted to, no doubt about it. God.
Yeah, it's got you spinning. It's got you spinning a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know what I would rather do? To me, Hovland, Harmon.
Ooh.
That's pretty – I think that's a better
– for a cash-oriented lineup,
A better 2v2 than having Fleetwood, who to me is a good tournament play, but Fleetwood's a wild card. To me, Hovland and Harmon – I think this is actually the optimal, like a very, very solid cash build right here.
Totally agree. I would easily put this in a cash oriented lineup, maybe even that higher dollar buy in stuff. It's like you said, got everything you want, guys that you can expect to be there and probably not be there. If that makes sense. Sorry, I said a double negative.
It does.
Maybe Ty Hatton, but the fact that he's 7,400. That's why it makes sense. So those are a couple of our lineups. This is our Monday show here. We'll be in this time slot for probably the next couple of weeks. Of course, stay tuned. We'll let you know if it changes. There is only one more week after this before we get to the playoffs. It's the Wyndham. Then we start with the Northern Trust BMW Tour Championship. And then it's the Fall Swing. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. The Fall Swing is a great time to play and bet on PGA. It's one of the most fun times of the year in terms of that. The fields aren't that great and the books just don't care all that much. So you can certainly catch a few sleeping and get some good lines. Stay tuned for that. We'll certainly be covering that. Of course, in our short form videos as well with your betting video that you do with Josh. And then of course, check out my three short form videos that I do each and every week. So Ben, why don't I just give my hot take quickly before we get on in there, because you'll be back with Eric live before lock on Wednesday. Now it won't be as live before locky as last week was. We're not going to put you guys on the airwaves at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you.
Although it would be interesting to see Eric go at 2 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast time. Would like to see how he handles that. No, I'm getting a shake of the head from Jordan behind the glass.
Jordan acts that scenario.
Yeah, acts that scenario because he would have to be here as well at 2 o'clock. And that's, yeah, it's just, I understand. We're not going to make him do that. So who's going to win this week? All right. I think it's going to be somebody above 9,000. Somebody above 9,000. It's a guy that hasn't won on the PGA Tour yet. It's a guy that's been really close a couple of times this year at 9,100. Oh. Scotty Scheffler. I think he really gets it done. I know that everyone's been wanting the win. I think he's a good price this week. Also, one last note on good prices. Dustin Johnson is 20-1. Ben, at a course he's won twice before. I think that's a good bet. So that's how I'll send it off. Do we have a time for Wednesday that you want to let everybody know about?
No, it should be, you know, it should be that same time slot, I believe 7 to 8, but we'll have you guys, you know, check the tweets. That's why you should follow us both on Twitter, DFS Golfer 23, Jazz Raz DFS. You guys know the drill. And of course, I'm going to say at the end here, that Awesome Odd sports betting channel is growing so fast and we're so happy to have you guys as part of it. If you haven't gone over there yet, just go over and subscribe now, because like I said, the content is pouring out and it's golf, NFL, college football, everything that you need from a betting standpoint. Things like Dustin Johnson at 20-1 is the information you'll get over there. And that is something that can be very profitable this week.
Sure can be. So we'll see you next week at the Wyndham, everybody. Good luck at the WGC FedEx St. Jude, and we'll see you on the other side. Cheers.